Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, post-argument NFL Sherman Act edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 13, 2010, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in American Needle versus National Football League. The question in this case is whether the NFL teams violated Section 1 of the Sherman Act when they awarded Reebok an exclusive license to sell team headwear. To discuss the case, we have Willamette University College of Law professor Jeffrey Standen. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Standen.
Good day. Thank you to the Federalist Society for inviting me to participate in this podcast series. The case I want to talk about today is one of great importance to the world of antitrust, but even of greater significance to the world of sports and sports law. I'm referring, of course, to the appeal before the United States Supreme Court in the American Needle Incorporated case versus the NFL. Now, this case involves the NFL's decision to license its trademarks for headwear on an exclusive basis. NFL trademarks would include the identity or insignia of teams that you often will see on a hat or a cap or whatever that people might wear. And for about 20 years, the NFL had five or six different manufacturers of headwear that held license agreements. The NFL would permit any of those manufacturers to produce the headwear for sale. In 2003, the NFL decided that it would change its practice, and instead of granting a license to half a dozen headwear manufacturers, they would give an exclusive license for that purpose to Reebok. And when the NFL did that, American Needle, one of the licensees, sued. Now, the NFL is a unique entity. It is not a corporation, but rather is an unincorporated association that today consists of 32 teams. And the teams are independently owned. So the NFL does not appear to be a single entity in the sense that a single corporation might have divisions all around the country or even all around the world. And by the same token, the NFL also is not simply an association per se of 32 independent companies, because the NFL, unlike other companies, has no independent basis for producing its product apart from the cooperation of its members. In other words, unlike a manufacturer, say, of automobiles that joins with another manufacturer of automobiles for a joint venture, for the NFL, all of its ventures essentially are joint ventures. The NFL always produces its products through the cooperation of different teams to meet on the field, to agree to rules, to engage in a tournament to determine the champion. And so the issue in the case, the American Needle litigation, is this, that when the NFL jointly decided to grant to Reebok an exclusive license to produce its headwear, did the NFL violate the Sherman Antitrust Act? In other words, did the NFL commit conspiracy to restrain trade? Now, American Needle's position is this, that the NFL consists of 32 independent teams which came together in a conspiracy to exclude American Needle from the ability to produce headwear and essentially boycotted American Needle and gave the license only to Reebok. And so therefore, American Needle says that the NFL's decision, like the decision of any other joint venture, should be subject to the antitrust law, specifically should be subject to Section 1 of the Sherman Act and should be assessed under the rule of reason. The rule of reason asks whether or not the joint venture's activity was on balance pro-competitive or anti-competitive. Now, the NFL's position is entirely the opposite. The NFL's position is that we are not 32 independent teams, at least not for the purposes of jointly licensing our trademarks. Instead, we are one manufacturer, we are one league, and that is the NFL. And the NFL's view is that the only reason the NFL consists of 32 independently owned teams is to enhance playing competitiveness, that fans and teams will be more competitive, that fans will care more if teams are locally owned and compete against teams from other cities, rather than two divisions of one corporation, so to speak, competing against each other. So the NFL's view, in a word or in a phrase, is that it is a single entity. for the purposes of antitrust law. Now, both American Needle's position and the NFL's position are like ships passing in the night. The American Needle's position is that as joint venturers, this and virtually any other joint action of the NFL is potentially subject to antitrust law. The NFL's position is because it is a single entity, then this and, by extension, virtually any other joint decision of the NFL is immune from antitrust liability. The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, from which this appeal originates, took a different view entirely. And the Seventh Circuit tried to articulate what it called a limited single entity perspective, a limited single entity view that says that the NFL is, for some purposes, a single entity, and then impliedly for other purposes, it would not be a single entity. Now, the Seventh Circuit said that for this purpose, for the purpose of marketing, promoting its trademarks through headwear, for this purpose, the NFL is, in fact, a single entity. So it's a rare case and somewhat unique in that both parties took an appeal from the Seventh Circuit. Neither party is happy with the Seventh Circuit's decision. American Needle wants antitrust scrutiny. The NFL wants to be immune from antitrust scrutiny. Now, with that in mind as background, the case is ostensibly about single entity status, but really it's not. Really it's a question, it's an examination or even a referendum on the rule of reason. The rule of reason, which is the rule, as I mentioned earlier, that informs Section 1 liability, the rule of reason is a very fact-intensive, expensive form of litigation. It's a very clumsy and inefficient method of regulation. If American Needle is correct, then the NFL will perpetually face, and as it has in the past, the threat of antitrust examination, antitrust liability for its joint decisions. Well, again, unlike most manufacturers who join together for limited purposes, the NFL and arguably other professional sports leagues join together for nearly all purposes. And therefore, says the NFL, virtually all of our decisions, including our decisions to limit the schedules of teams, our decisions to prohibit teams from playing outside of the league, our decisions to purchase game balls from one manufacturer and not another, and so forth, all of these decisions would be subject to the expensive regulation of antitrust law. Those litigations are uniquely fact-intensive, and they are cumbersome, and the NFL wants to, for some of its operations, wants to be immune from that liability. The American Needle's position, however, is that antitrust law should regulate NFL actions and, by extension, the actions of other sports leagues. Now, American Needle is cognizant of the felt need of the NFL to locate some of its operations outside of the scope of antitrust law. However, in its argument before the Supreme Court, American Needle was willing to concede nothing and did press the court for a rule that would subject the NFL to antitrust liability for, theoretically, for all of its operations. So I suggest the court has three choices in trying to resolve this dispute. The court could adopt, of course, American Needle's position and continue, as we have in the past, to subject the NFL and other sports leagues' decisions to antitrust review. However, this would continue the problem that sports leagues uniquely have of fearing antitrust liability for any decisions that it makes, because all of their decisions are, in essence, joint decisions. And secondly, would form a very expensive means of trying to regulate what is permissible and impermissible in professional sports. Secondly, the court could adopt the NFL's position, that is, that the NFL cannot, as a single entity, ever be guilty of a conspiracy, because a single entity cannot, in logic and in law, conspire with itself. The problem with this approach is that the NFL obviously has bigger fish to fry. And in just a short time, the NFL will be engaged with its Players Association in a what promises to be a rather contentious and involved round of collective bargaining. And for the NFL to be a single entity would be the NFL's holy grail. The NFL has, for decades, lost in courtrooms across America when it tried to impose upon players limitations in player movement, limitations in player wages. Even the NFL draft itself has been subjected to antitrust scrutiny. And in all of those arguments, in all of those cases, the NFL has lost. It is only through the collective bargaining process that the NFL has been able to continue the NFL draft and other salary and player movement restrictions that would otherwise be in violation of antitrust law. If the NFL wins this case and is able to convince a court that this single entity status applies in the labor market, then the NFL would no longer be constrained in its dealings with its players by the threat of antitrust liability. The third and final approach the court could take would be to simply affirm the Seventh Circuit. But that itself is also problematic because the Seventh Circuit's view, this limited single entity view or doctrine, is undefined. For what purposes, in what markets would the NFL be a single entity, and for what purposes or in what markets would the NFL be a multiple entity or a non-single entity or just a traditional joint venture? So in essence, the Seventh Circuit's decision begs the question and puts the court back where it started in saying for what kinds of activities should sports leagues be immune from antitrust liability, and for which activities should the sports leagues be subject to antitrust liability. Now, the elephant in the room, of course, as I mentioned before, is the ongoing labor negotiations. And should or should not the NFL in the labor market be restricted by antitrust law or the threat of antitrust litigation when it deals with its players? And there is a very important and longstanding view, at least one view, among antitrust scholars that antitrust law is concerned with output. It's concerned with consumer markets and is not concerned, in other words, with inputs, with labor markets or other markets that would decide, you know, how much the NFL should pay players or its other inputs, its for stadia or whatnot, to put on its games. In other words, the antitrust law is not about dividing the spoils of the wealthy NFL teams, but rather is only about ensuring that the games themselves take place. And if that's the case, if antitrust law ultimately has little or nothing to say about labor markets, then in a sense the NFL could achieve its aims of being immune from antitrust liability just by simply litigating the antitrust issues directly.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.